I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The Mid-20s Theatre Society and Red Gate Art Society are back with a new production, a world premiere, Above the Hospital. It's written and directed by Bohan Bridge, who joins me now. He's written a play that's set in the present, where two Vancouver millennials come to terms with living in Vancouver, coming from elsewhere, wanting career fulfillment, and the social isolation that's bred in this town and that affects people their age acutely. The show opens this Saturday, the 13th of January, with a preview this Friday night. It's on until the 21st of January at the Red Gate Review Stage at Granville Island, 1601 Johnston Street. MTStheatre.com is the website for tickets and more information. Bohan Bridge is an actor, filmmaker, director, and the founder of Mid-20s Theatre Society. He was on the program when the production of Lonergan's This Is Our Life was staged here in Vancouver in July. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program, Bohan Bridge. Mr. Bridge, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me back.
You're very welcome. So it must be exciting to have written a play and now about to stage it. What was the genesis of wanting to write something of your own, say, and putting it on?
Well, the genesis of it is definitely sourcing back to, like, why I created Mid-20s Theater in general is essentially to produce kind of, like, original works that address new stories about people in, like, contemporary society. In this case, like, for Mid-20s, like, our main mandate is to kind of produce works that are centered on millennials and are by millennials and address, like, very specific millennial themes, like, let's say, like, adolescent angst, existential crises, dreams, aspirations, family matters, economic prosperity, and, like, the adversities of living in a city that's too expensive. So, that's essentially, like, why we're doing this story and why I decided to produce this original is essentially to kind of forward that whole mandate. And inevitably in the future, like, hopefully we'll be able to do, like, more original works that aren't just, like, written by me.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to, like, kind of set the foundation, obviously, like, someone has to bite the bullet. And I have this, like, really, really awesome play, which at first I didn't think was awesome because when you write your own work, you kind of never feel like you're satisfied with it.
Right.
But gradually throughout this developmental process with my cast and crew and, like, all their creative input, like, we're all very, very proud of this show and we're really, really excited to, like, premiere it next week.
The experience of Cameron and Lauren, what inspired that? I mean, is this something that you and your friends and your colleagues, is this something that you've been thinking about, talking about? I guess this is something that concerns all of us, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really funny, actually, because, like, the source of this idea came from a very specific experience I had, like, 2.5 years ago. Long story short, like, what happened was I was visiting this couple friend of mine with another couple. And literally their names were Cameron and Lauren. They're, like, really good friends of mine. They graduated the same class.
Uh-huh.
And one of them, like, Cameron, he was essentially an aspiring musician. And Lauren was an aspiring nursing student. So, like, it's really funny. We ended up kind of just, like, going over, and they lived in this really tiny apartment above the vet clinic over on Main and Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, like, we ended up just getting drunk, and, like, all the conversations started talking about, like, things about, like, pursuing the arts. How do you establish one's career, like, when you're 21 and you don't go to school? Like, should I go to school now? Should I not? How are we, like, we have rent to pay next week, and, like, oh, what are the jobs that we're doing right now? So that's kind of, like, where the foundation came. But then gradually, as time went by, like, I haven't talked to them for a while, but I still keep in touch every once in a while, like,
yeah,
on Facebook. And the idea just, like, culminated into this, like, narrative. And then this thing happened where I went to this restaurant, and, like, this experience I had was, like, fairly negative. Like, the waitress was, she wasn't, like, very happy and go-lucky, and she was kind of just, like, very honest about who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just, like, flicked, and then, like, I wrote this down, and for some reason I just had the incentive to write it down because, like, I don't know, it tends to drive from, like, an intuitive thing, and it just became this big narrative. And then it ended up being this thing which I wasn't, like, expecting it to really provide much, because, like, when it comes to the narrative of the story, it has to have a point, and it all kind of has to culminate into this thing, and everything has to circulate. But this thing just somehow really worked out, and it's kind of hard to describe exactly, but, like, what happens to the audience without kind of giving things away.
Right.
But I really encourage people to come see it because, like, you definitely leave feeling very satisfied and, like, as if you've kind of, like there's revelations. It's very personal, and just, like, the discussion of, like, new ideas that lead to just, like, new thinking. It's very crazy.
Yeah. So we'll try to skirt around it, and you can tell us as much as you'd like. The relationship that one has with Vancouver, because it's a complicated one, regardless of how old one is, and I can only assume that because I'm not a millennial, for a millennial, for someone in their mid twenties, it can be quite a challenge, quite daunting. The relationship that Cameron and Lauren have, I mean, that's not unique to a lot of British Vancouverites that I know, in that they come from elsewhere. Is that right?
Yeah, they come from Kindersley, Ontario.
Yeah.
Like a very, very, very tiny town, kind of the equivalent to, like, Tawasin in South Delta. Yeah. Yeah, and, like, the funny thing about this is, that's exactly it. Like, there's a lot of couples that essentially a lot of my friends, even in this cast, who are residing in Vancouver right now in order to kind of, like, pursue their dreams of acting or filmmaking or music, they actually all moved from, like, elsewhere. Like, they came from, like, Ottawa, Ontario. And, like, I think, like, Vancouver's kind of grown to become this very sort of, like, equivalent to, I guess Hollywood North, so, like, L.A. And New York, like, this hub for pursuing your dreams. And, so in a sense, essentially in this play, we are addressing that and kind of depicting, like, the adversities of being an outsider, but trying to, like, live in the city. Because, like, this city, as you know, as you said, it's very complicated. There's a very specific type of, like, tone that people take. And, like, some have even claimed that's, like, fairly, like, superficial, which is, like, I personally love Vancouver, but, and, like, I think deep down, like, amongst, like, if you go out and you try to, like, hang out, like, there is this, like, wall that everybody has in Vancouver, but, like, once you break it down, like, everybody's very genuine, but it's very hard to, like, overcome that, and I think, like, also with the social isolationism situation that sort of, like, became prominent in the last couple of months, like, I'm not really surprised that, like, that is a big thing, because, like, it's really hard for people to kind of just, like, assimilate themselves into the city, even though, like, it is fairly nice and pristine.
I ride the bus once a day, and there are people on that bus. There's, let's say, 30 people on the bus at the time. At least 10 of them, 15 of them maybe, I see every day. But, I mean, we don't even look at each other. It's like we can't look at each other.
They're the exact same people that you see every day.
Yeah.
Wow, and you guys never even look at each other.
Whenever, like, to talk to each other would be impossible, I would think. I mean, but that speaks to people that you would, you know, the same coffee shop that one goes to, the same library or whatever restaurant that one goes to. I mean, the talk is very minimum, and it's only on a need-to-talk basis, I think. And that's my experience, and I'm sure that's a lot of the experience that people have that come to Vancouver, that they notice us about it. Us.
Yeah, and like that's very strange too, because, like, essentially I have a friend who, like, who goes to school in New York. She's studying Columbia, and she's, like, lived there for about 2 years, and she says, like, it's weird because Vancouver and New York are fairly similar in that, like, there's a lot of people around, and essentially you do see the same people around the same areas, but then if they feel like they don't have a purpose or reason to talk to you, they won't. And in New York, apparently everybody's aware of that, and that's, like, the culture. Like, it's very, like, in a sense, like, about self, like, not, I don't want to say self-serving in a bad way, but, like, you know, everybody knows what they want. In Vancouver, whereas, like, it's kind of grown to become the same thing, except I think deep down, people really do want to get to know you, which is weird, because, like, essentially, it's just, like, the nerve-wrackingness of trying to, like, go up to someone and then accidentally reveal yourself and then be judged for it, and, like, I don't know why that judging has kind of, like, become a big thing about Vancouver, or, like, the fear of, like, being perceived as something you're not, or just, like, kind of holding up to these, like, weird levels of expectations that you've built for yourself, because, like, essentially we're all in the city, and, like, we're all here for the same reason. It's quite surprising and weird. I don't know why it's prominent now.
You notice this in terms of politics, that a lot of the same issues that concern us as Vancouverites, I mean, are not partisan issues. Yeah, because we can't talk to each other, they essentially become that.
Yeah. I feel like we kind of, like, do you feel like we kind of compare ourselves to, like, America, like the United States?
We compare ourselves to, like, even Toronto, even. Like, we have this fixation, and unfortunately, I feed into this. I have a lot of theater people on, and recently from Toronto, or from New York or other American cities, and I'm constantly asking them what they think of Vancouver. And Vancouver audiences.
Mm-hmm. And are they essentially saying the same thing?
No, they all say that Vancouver's a lovely place, and they say that they're excited to come here. But the fact that I'm asking them what they think of Vancouver, I think, is something that probably I'm expecting the audience that's listening to the conversation for me to ask this outsider.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I agree.
I mean, I think we just have this. I mean, we think we're a world class city, but I think we're also, I think we're not comfortable with it, and we're constantly comparing ourselves to other big cities because we think we need to.
Yeah, it's like we've kind of like established this big. We feel like we have this big image that we've naturally grown into,
yeah.
and that we have to live by it now.
Yeah,
which is like weird because like the more we try to live by it, the more kind of like this facade. Essentially is like affecting our own people, but then it's still building this or stabilizing this image that we have out with the outside, like the Toronto and New York and stuff. It's so crazy. It's fascinating.
Yeah, and I mean, we do have a small town mentality still. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, you know, the minute that we hear George Clooney is in town or Nicole Kidman, the Twitter goes abuzz with mm-hmm. sightings of these people. And I mean, I wouldn't expect that if we were a world-class city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like we have like this big thing about this sort of like if a celebrity comes, like oh, like they can just walk on Yale Town or along Yale Town and like we won't bother them.
Yeah.
And stuff. But then like even though like in Daily High we'll see like oh like KJ Apa is like on the street, everyone look, and like what's the heat meter is like 3,000 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. It's like this deep down, these two levels of like how we are and how we perceive to be, and it definitely is affecting like I think. Are people in our 20s, because like when it comes to trying to like establish your career or just like be who you are, like that really messes with you and kind of like skews your directions of where you want to go. And essentially sometimes like people end up settling for things which they don't realize is actually making them unhappy.
Mm.
And then by the time when they grow up, it's too late, you know?
Yeah. And see, this I guess speaks to, I mean, we're all complaining about the cost of living in this town. I'm sure millennials and, especially millennials like yourself who are working in the arts, figure this all acutely, that your future is tenuous at best in terms of making a career in the arts in this town. Is it?
Mm, it is. It is very tenuous, yes. I would agree. Like, essentially, what I wasn't expecting when it comes to, well, I guess theater is essentially always going to be theater, and it'll always like have a specific demographic. Like there'll always be people out there who just like will not like theater for its medium.
Mm-hmm.
But like when I first got into it with This Is Our Youth last year, I did not expect it to kind of like be as literally uncontrollable as it seems. Like I tried really hard for that, and inevitably our production was fairly successful.
Mm-hmm.
But even commercial wise, like we literally like almost broke even, but we like didn't even break even.
Mm-hmm.
And for this case, for this play, like obviously it's an original, it's new. We have like this whole, like we're doing the same press campaign, and I'm working with my best people that I love, like Teresa, mm-hmm. as you know. And but still, just like there's this risk with it, where it's just like, what will people think? But essentially, like after this, then where do we go next? And like I'm really good at kind of like, I like to like plan my stuff very much ahead of time, not without like making myself go crazy, but just like even with this, it's like you gotta like have this hand of just like, you know, essentially everything could just blow up and fail, and like you could lose a lot of money, you could lose friends, you know, people could not get it, like what you could do essentially could be forgotten, which is a big theme that's addressed in this play about like, you know, what's the point, what is the role of the artist today, like how do you define an artist, is it essentially necessary and important nowadays in this society when we have like real events all the time that are like being viewed and are supplanting essentially like metaphor and fiction. So it's just like, what are you really doing and what are you providing? And, you know, essentially, if it's going to be forgotten, like some people would claim everything else, not me per se, that's fairly pessimistic for my taste.
Mm-hmm.
But like, why would, like, what is the point of doing it? And so I think for people who really genuinely want to get into the arts and establish a career as an artist, you have to overcome this and kind of just like realize that like there is the results are going to be out of your control, but you have to do it in order to find out, and like you can't be afraid of failing in the midst of that.
Now, you're amongst your friends and colleagues, are you, when you talk amongst yourselves about your futures and what you want to do,
mm-hmm.
Do you see Vancouver being, say, a viable option, or is going elsewhere, say, what all of you are planning to do?
I actually, okay, I will, so this is my 100% honest opinion. Even though Vancouver is, like, very expensive and very, very difficult to live in and essentially to thrive as an artist, in comparison to L.A. and New York, and, like, I've been to L.A. once, not for career options, but just when I was young. Yeah. But I have friends, like, with my friend in New York, who literally just sent me an email saying, like her honest opinion about how, like, Vancouver literally has it all, like, to thrive in, to work in, and to live in. Mm. And it's very surprising because, like, even in the face of the adversity of Vancouver, like, essentially, it would be more difficult to go out to, like, the bigger hubs like New York and L.A. because there's just so much more people. So I think, personally, I plan to settle in Vancouver. Like, I want to raise a family here, but even for artistic goals, I've definitely been able to find a way to thrive in this scene and to actually produce work that has a result in it. For my friends, for the actors-wise, like, I think some of them do want to stay here, but and especially because, like, the productions are booming now more than ever, so, yeah. Like, a lot of people are telling them to stay here, and they're actually booking roles, which is surprising. Uh-huh. But for music-wise, I'm kind of uncertain about that. Music has kind of become a very, very interesting thing because, like, I think that's probably the hardest career to pursue now, especially now with, like, kind of like how streaming doesn't even provide any, like, money. It's just, yeah. Like, where would you find that stability for that? Like, even theater, like, theater is pretty good at, like, getting a profit back when you do it correctly. But music, I still am very, like, foreign to it, and that's kind of scary for me. So I'm not sure about that for my friends.
Yeah. What's fascinating is I'm talking to you because the show starts and the show opens this week, mm-hmm. is that, I mean, I'm hearing from you. The I guess the madness of having to put on a show and the box office and these things that you have to worry about, obviously. Mm-hmm. Your mind is also to the work itself and how that'll be received creatively. I mean, this must be a crazy time for you, is it?
It's pretty crazy. Yeah, I'm pretty level headed with it. I've held myself down for it, but yes, it is essentially very crazy. I have to do all, like, because our crew is still fairly small, like, I end up doing all the budgeting, and which is my decision. Like, uh-huh. I, at the start, I always do that. And then, like, even amongst that, like, I go to rehearsals, I bring all the props, and, like, we're in the theater now, so, like, I can leave them there instead of having to transfer them all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, like, taking all the managerial positions and administrative work and just, like, getting that all out of the way myself. And, like, it sucks, but, like, if you bite the bullet for that, like, the actors and the rest of the crew inevitably are, like, they have the space and the freedom to just, like, really work their magic, and, like, the process ends up really working in the favor of the production and, like, really makes it, like, beautiful and creative. I don't think I could skip out on that. Otherwise, yeah. I don't think this production would work. Uh-huh.
So you mentioned the cast, and I was looking at some of their names and some of their credits. I mean, these are obviously young actors that are, but they are working a lot in different, whether it's a theater, film, or television, right?
Yeah. What's really crazy is the big, I guess, like, for This Is Our Youth, I had Zach, Quinn, and Mackenzie. And Mackenzie and Quinn were very well known in the film and TV part of Vancouver, and Zach is very well known amongst the Vancouver theater scene. But then for this one, it's definitely kind of, like, lean more towards theater professionalism. Like, mm-hmm. Mira, the lead who plays Lauren, who's amazing, by the way, I love her dearly. I know her on a personal level, but then before this play, like, vaguely. But then, like, she studied in New York at the Conservatory for the Arts, and, like, she's actually so professional, and, like, she's very, like, theater-centric and has all these techniques that, like, from me being, like, sort of, like, an old, like, mixed background in a way, like, I've learned so much from, which is very, very interesting. But then, like, for Tristan, who's playing Cameron, he's essentially the exact opposite. Like, he's, like, Quinn, and he studied in VFS for film, and mm-hmm. then, like, he is an inspiring musician as well, so, like, a lot of his perceptions and how he acts is very intuitive and spontaneous, and that kind of, like, really, like, contrasts with Mira's sort of, like, very calculated and rational creative choices, and, like, her work with, like, objectives and, like, wants, and it creates this really beautiful dichotomy that's, like, essentially perfect for the couple. But then amongst that, like, with the beautiful cast I have, like, there's Zach and Nat, that you know of, Nadia Dibrogorsky, and then Emma Young and Aaron Paul Stewart, and they all come from these very sort of, like, eccentric indie theater and indie film backgrounds. Aaron has kind of had some, like, professionalism on TV, but then, yeah, all of them are essentially, like, coming from these little corners of, like, the exact same scene with their, like, personalities. it's very weird. It's very, very, like, eclectic and exotic.
Yeah.
In a strange way.
And yeah. and for, you mentioned This Is Our Youth earlier. I mean, that production with the was a great success. I remember reading about it. Reviews were quite good, weren't they?
Yeah, surprisingly. I was, like I wasn't expecting that. But, yeah, they were like, fairly positive. Like, they were readable for me,
yeah.
Which is a big thing. Yeah. But, did you say what is a success? Like, what considers a theater play a success?
Yeah, you mentioned earlier just how you mentioned just the numbers in terms of breaking even, whether that broke even or not. Obviously, whatever experience that was, good or bad, that didn't, say, ruin you for trying it again or continuing this company, right?
Yes. Okay, yeah. I totally... That's the thing. I guess in the end, success is it literally what you define it as. Like, success is whatever you want it to be. And for success in my case, for a successful theater production, it's not about breaking the box office. Like, commercially, like, as long as I budget it properly, like, that's the goal, to sort of, like, keeping yourself afloat. Oh. And to kind of, like, to be able to do a next show. But then, like, I think what essentially makes the production successful for me is these little things of, like, do I get this creative sort of, like, sign, this, like, external validation from my directing that I see in the play in the end. And, like, that can range from just, like, an entirely good show that just goes perfect in the whole evening. And, like, if that happens, that is, like, gold. And then if that happens once in the whole run, then I essentially have, like, satisfied my, like, I've essentially been able to achieve what I wanted to achieve. And that essentially makes it a successful production to me. But then, like, sometimes theater is so organic that every night is essentially different. So, like, there will be, like, lesser versions of it, or, like, essentially things will fail on stage. But for This Is Our Youth, like, what really made a success to me was, like, I was able to see exactly that we got there. Mm. Like, and we achieved the goals that not only I want to achieve, but, like, the crew and the cast all wanted to achieve, and we're trying so hard for, like, the past, like, 3 months to do. And they all felt it, and they all, like, it was like this gradual self-realization that we had together of just, like, that was a good show. Like, we did that. We were all there. And if we can all feel that at the same time, and we all can, like, look at each other and just say, yes, like, that is a success. That is a success.
Yeah. Now, you deal in this show with the life crises that Cameron and Lauren encounter, mm-hmm. and that all millennials seem to encounter at this time of life. I'm in my mid-30s, so I'm part of that, the rest of society that sort of looks down on millennials. I mean, I may not do that myself, but I understand when that happens, that seems to look down on millennials and whatever life crises they're talking about, and thinking, you know, it's going to get harder, it's going to get worse down the line. But when a crisis happens in your mid-20s, I mean, it can really alter one's life. The course of one's life, and that's why it's important to talk about this, or at the very least for people like myself to listen, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like, I think it was like that artist, that music artist Grimes, Claire Boucher, who I'm a huge fan of, she had this interview, and she said this one time, like, what you do in your 20s and your adolescence is essentially what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life.
Mm.
Like, some people would argue that that's not true, but I personally think that's very true, because, like, all my older friends I see now, like, essentially they are doing the things that they were doing in their 20s, and that can be whether or not there's things that make them happy or things that don't. And, I think it's very important, because, like, this weird crisis is sort of, like, unavoidable. Like, once you turn 25, it seems like everything just somehow, there's this doubt that just happens, and it's, like, it's as if you have to, like, conquer that, so you can, like, realize, like, what you really want to do. And because of the way that society lays it out and kind of, like, the adversities that you face, like, I don't have enough money, or just, like, I want to raise a family, but, like, I want to be a musician, but that will not provide me with the lifestyle that I need to raise the family. And, like, but then if I get this office job, then that will give me enough to raise a family, but, like, you know, essentially I'll be spending my day in an office sitting and doing emails.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to do that? And some people who do want to do that, I highly respect that, because, like, I have friends who have stable jobs and like work like that, that enjoy art, but they don't partake in it, and they are genuinely happy with their lives. But then I also have a lot of friends who are doing that, and doing that for reasons that are beyond themselves. Like, they're just doing it because they have to do it to survive, so they can, like, pursue their artistic goals. Like, I essentially am kind of like one of those now. But like, you know, they inevitably they settle because like it becomes too hard, and then they just settle into this lifestyle that's like just mundane and moderate for them, and they're doing it because like it provides like stability for them, and they regret it in the end. And I think that is fairly like awful, and like I don't blame them for them because like they're like society is very hard, you know, like it is like these external reasons that sort of drive people to skew like their career directions towards these things that are less satisfying. And but essentially like in the end, like you could say that like that is your decision, like you chose to not record music anymore, and you chose to you know, not write, like for a musician, say let's say you chose to like not kind of like send demos out, you didn't necessarily pursue your career, you just like played guitar all day in your apartment and just talked about it, like that is that really your fault, or is it like this fear that's instilled by society and just like what if I fail, like why it happens is insane. I can't, like, I personally, that's why I'm like, I find it so fascinating, this play, because like with Cameron, he is essentially that type of man. Like he's a man who wants to be an artist, and he has a genuine passion for it, but like he has this weird fear instilled from his work, and like he never shows it to his girlfriend, and he's not like shown it to anybody else out. He's like not an exhibitionist. He hasn't tried to like kind of read books about how to like go about it, and like all he has is like this very sort of like simplistic view of just like, once you turn 18, you have to move out of the small town, you have to move into the big city, and then you have to make connections. That's it. And like there's like so much more beyond just like kind of like becoming like to like establish an artistic career than just like moving to a big city and just like saying like you will make connections and like go to parties and stuff, because that is like such a small component of just like really what it takes. And but then I don't blame him, because like I think beyond that, like all about just like this unknownness, and as you said, the tenuousness of pursuing artistic career and the fear of like there is no promise essentially about what you do is a very daunting thing. And that is, I think, what they are both trying to overcome, and what affects them greatly, and what leads to this big, big conflict in this play and produces this really crazy experience that happens.
So Bo, will the real Cameron and Lauren, will they get to see the show?
Oh my God. I am not sure. Okay, like this crazy thing about this, I don't know what to think about this now, because like I don't think they know that I wrote this play like based on my experience with them.
Yeah.
So like this is gonna be like insane. Like for all my friends who found out and like I've told, like they find it so hilarious that I would do this, and like they're all just like, how do they know about it? Do they know about it?
Yeah.
And I just like I haven't personally like sought out for them to be like, hey, I wrote this play, and like both characters are based on like, this hangout I had with you guys a long time ago. Do you want to come see it? Because like I honestly have no idea what they're gonna think. Like it's crazy. Like I'm not sure. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Now the other thing I want to ask you, because you've written this play. What were some of the sort of plays or playwrights that you looked up to growing up, and did any of their experiences say inform yours as you were writing this play?
Ooh, definitely. I think, like, even though I was a little late on the bandwagon with this, but, like, it's a little pretentious, but, like, Eugene O'Neill is definitely was, like, a big thing that changed a lot of my perspective about, like, playwriting and theater in general. Before that, though, I was really a huge fan of, like, Ibsen's, like, A Dollhouse.
Mm-hmm.
I think A Dollhouse was fairly inspiring in a way for this one, because, like, I kind of, like, feel like I modeled Lauren a lot after, like, those type of characters, like those female characters where it's like they are essentially caged by like these different adversities of just like, let's say there's in the Doll's House, like I guess it's about a female that's like feeling caged within her marriage, and like her husband's like a fairly awful man, and like especially in another play, Hedda Gabler, like it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's this like big side of like this heavy inspiration of Lauren that I took from those, in that like she is also feeling like very caged in like not only this relationship, but like I tried to like make it like the whole world was like caging her in a way. So there's some like kind of like feminist points to like kind of explore there. But yeah, Strindberg, Ibsen, two heavy inspirations. Eugene O'Neill, though, for writing and narrative structure, and just sort of like what you should focus on in the themes, essentially in the end, and what it should all draw to. I took heavily from Eugene O'Neill.
And I guess being the director of this production, O'Neill, you probably understood why O'Neill had such directions. for the director and the actors in the play itself.
Yeah, yeah, because it's so, like, every single line just has that parentheses with the, and how he says it or where he looks to, right?
Yeah.
He's very, very specific. And, like, for this play, too, like, I definitely wrote it in a sense where it's, like, there's all these specificities and, like, this narrative is very linear and it all culminates and one step leads to another. But then because of this, though, I also had to direct it because, like, I think for actors to take this, like, you could essentially make Above the Hospital in that very specific way and be able to produce, like, a satisfying result. But then, like, I kind of also wanted to explore the actors' creative input and just see, like, what they had to say because, like, as you know, like, Mira is not from here as well. Like, and a lot of these cast members, they essentially are living similar lives to these characters and could provide, like, a lot of, like, personal experience that they've experienced that not essentially is exactly what the play, what's happening in the play, but is the same thing. And, like, they can, like, add to it and make it more, like, substantial.
Yeah. Well, it's nice talking again. Break a leg, as I say, in your business, and I appreciate this.
Oh, no, thank you very much, Joe. No, this conversation was awesome. I loved it.
MTStheater.com is the website. Above the Hospital, presented by Mid-20s Theater Society and Red Gate Art Societies at the Revue Stage on Granville Island, the 12th to the 21st of January. Bohan Bridge, the playwright and director, join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plato.